Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Jim Napier, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, Jim Napier from Geek Tyrant. How are you doing, sir? You're a new guest on the program.
I am doing fabulous. Thank you for having me on. I'm so happy to be here.
Absolutely. We tried to have you on earlier last month, but there was an issue that happened. Not your fault. the world
thank you.
Came that crashing
make,
down
trying to make me
you.
Feel bad right off the bat. I see how it is.
Well, no, because then I was on your show even before that, but you weren't able to come on because Hurricane Irene came out and knocked out your power. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, exactly. There's been a whole debacle of stuff going on. Living in New Jersey, there's all sorts of fun stuff happening all the time.
Well, there is New Jersey. I learned I was on my way to New York in early August, and we were driving through New Jersey because I came in through Pennsylvania by the Poconos.
Yeah.
And we stopped. I wanted to get a soda or something. Oh, no, I wanted to get dinner because we were heading into New York City to see Fozzie Bear. And I didn't want to stop in New York to eat because it was kind of crazy.
Sure,
so
sure.
We got off on this exit and you couldn't make left-hand turns and nothing was open.
Oh, jug handles. That's the joy that I found out about. That's what they're called. You can't
jug
make left hand. Yeah, jug handle. It's imagine a handle on
that. Sounds like a derogatory term for like a female body part.
Yes, it does, but it's not that. Trust us. Basically, you have to make right-hand turns. I was sitting there. I found out just like you did in the left-hand lane, ready to turn, ready to. You know, I'm from the Midwest. You know, I've lived all over the country, but never have I had to experience having the inability to make a left-hand turn. You can't make left-hand turns here.
It's bizarre. It's like I likened it to Footloose, that like maybe like sometime in the 80s, like some preacher's kid was killed in a left-hand turn accident, and then he like outlawed it, and there's going to be like some spunky teenagers are going to come to town and make left-hand turns and dance around, you know, and try and change the town's mind.
I have no idea.
Which is funny, though, is like Detroit, which is about 3 hours from me. Mm-hmm. Detroit, not only can you make left-hand turns, you can make U-turns all over the city. They literally call it a Michigan left.
Wow. I like Michigan, man. That's good.
Yeah.
I like U-turns.
I got directions. Somebody was giving me directions. They're like, oh, yeah, you go over here and you make a Michigan left. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, a left, you know, U-turn. I'm like, oh, you haven't been out of your city in a while, have you? Anyways, let's get through our paperwork here. You can go to Fat Guys at the Movies to get a hold of us. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we pop right up. You can listen to all our shows and my movie reviews and all that kind of stuff, DVD rundown. We've got Spotlight, and we have The Idiot Boxers as well. You can go to you can get Fat Guys on Facebook by going to facebook.com/FGATM, or you can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We do get... We have a listener feedback that came through Facebook, so that's always a nice way to get in touch with us. You can give us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. And Jim, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, what you do. And I know you come from the Midwest and you like to make left-hand turns.
Yes.
Enlighten us further.
I shall. I have been writing at napiersnews.com, my personal site, since basically 2005. But I'm a film lover, film advocate, I like to call myself. And I'm
an advocate.
A geek. I love writing movie news and entertainment news. And I work at geektyrant.com. I am also known as Tiberius on that site. But you can follow me on Twitter at Jim_Napier. And I also happen to host another podcast that Kevin mentioned, Popcast Podcast on Twitter. It is the Popcast, the official pop culture injection that we
official.
Have. Well, no, it's the...
You're licensed by pop culture in general?
I have actually... It took a long time. I took a course. And I got licensed, but then again, it was not as hard to get my ability to get that license as I thought. So be aware, I'm officially licensed.
Is it like Clown College?
I threw the official in there, unbeknownst to the reality. It's actually technically the weekly pop culture injection. That sounds better, doesn't it?
There you go.
No official.
All right. Well, cool. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. The first two we've got in this segment, we actually didn't see. You didn't see either of these, did you?
No.
The first one is In Time, in which Justin Timberlake goes all Logan's Run on the establishment when he discovers how to steal time from the wealthy and make him live forever.
Just once, I'd like to wake up with more time on my hand than hours in the day.
How old are you?
28.
I'm 105. But the day comes when you've had enough. If you had as much time as I have, what would you do with it?
Sure as hell wouldn't waste it.
The last time anyone saw him alive, there was over a century on that clock.
Well, follow the time.
His name is Will Salas.
You can't hide 100 years in the ghetto.
You know that time will get you killed.
Hey, Mom, I'm gonna get out of here.
I just wouldn't know what to do if I lost you.
Are you gonna see this? Are you? First of all, do you like JT? Are you into JT as an actor?
No. I'll tell you, he's gone seriously downhill since The Social Network. I think that was almost a fluke.
Social Network was like a year ago, man.
I know, but come on. He's had Bad Teacher, Friends with Benefits.
He was the only funny thing in Bad Teacher. And Friends with Benefits wasn't awful.
Maybe I'm being harsh. I am having trouble finding this movie any redeeming qualities from this Andrew Niccol film. I don't know. So the answer is no. I'm not going to be seeing this.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out at midnight on Thursday. It's one of these movies that it looks awful, but I think I'm going to like it. But I look at it as sort of this very disposable sci-fi, something like Free Jack. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters. I remember.
Yeah, so I mean, it's something like that, or like Repo Men without the blood and guts. So we've got that one, it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. I like JT. I think he does I've always liked his acting. I thought he was the only thing that was redeeming in The Love Guru. I thought he was great in Black Snake Moan. I thought he was he's a very funny guy. He can do comedy. I thought he was great as Boo Boo in Yogi Bear. So
okay,
I wanted him to play Green Lantern actually because he was one of the rumors before Ryan Reynolds got the part.
Interesting. So, that's right.
But it gets a preemptive suck. We got to go to the next one, which is The Rum Diary. Johnny Depp reprises his role as Hunter S. Thompson following another lengthy chemically altered adventure.
Puerto Rico. I came down here looking for a story.
It's called journalism.
Your resume here. Don't look so anxious. I wouldn't have paid for your hotel if I hadn't already hired you.
But I found the strangest paradise on Earth.
Hey, you made it.
But you said you had a TV.
The guy across the alley has a TV. I have binoculars.
This one's getting some buzz. What do you think?
I have heard a lot of good things from this movie. It starts out well from what I've heard. Now, this is all speculation from word of mouth. But, you know, it's definitely something that I might see. I like Johnny Depp, but I'm getting confused. Is he Hunter S. Thompson or is he Johnny Depp? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen. I don't know if you're ever going to get a straight answer from the trailers. I guess I thought it was based on Hunter S. Thompson work, so I'm assuming he's sort of just doing sort of the same thing, but he's not as bald.
Yeah. So.
We're going to have to go to a break. This one gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. You know, shame on you, Film District. So when we come back, we'll talk about some more movies. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We burned through In Time because they didn't screen it for us, and The Rum Diary. I'm curious about The Rum Diary, but here's the thing with even with Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, as well made of a movie as that is, Hunter S. Thompson's stuff is a little bit aimless, I think is a good way of saying it.
Yeah.
It works as sort of like these articles and these bit parts, but the long form Hunter S. Thompson, I just, it sometimes hits some valleys, we'll just say that. So I'll be curious to see how well The Rum Diary moves.
Yeah, I agree. At least Amber Heard's in it. I like
that. Is she
that
naked in it? That's a question.
I think that she might be. I don't know.
Suddenly my interest went up on this movie.
could things are looking up.
Well, you know what's funny is when she came out of the, I don't know if you could call her coming out of the closet when she like declared she was a lesbian, which I don't. I mean, it's like for a hot young woman in her early 20s, it's kind of like, I'm a lesbian. I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I thought.
And what's funny is I put out on Twitter, I said, darn it. She's a lesbian. That lowers my percentage of sleeping with her from 0 to 0. And a woman I know on Twitter who's a lesbian tweeted back to me. She's like, I'm a lesbian, and it lowers my percentage from 0 to 0. So, all right, funny. enough lesbian talk. Let's talk about a couple other movies. We've got Puss in Boots, in which Antonio Banderas voices his popular character from the Shrek series, telling the story of how he and Humpty Alexander Dumpty conspired to steal the goose that lays the golden eggs.
Murderous outlaws have discovered an ancient power. With it, they can destroy the world.
Puss, can you help us? There's no time to waste.
I will do it.
Puss!
Humpty Alexander Dumpty. We're going to need her. She's Kitty Softballs.
I'll steal you, Blind, and you'll never even know I was there.
She is a bad kitty.
Did you see this one, Jim?
I have not, but the fact that Humpty Alexander Dumpty is played by Zach Galifianakis is good for me. I'm a fan of Galifianakis's. And this actually looks better than some of the later Shrek movies, in my opinion.
It is. Well, you know, the fourth Shrek movie was like, the third movie was so awful that the fourth one was like, you lose perspective because you're like, well, it was way better than the fourth one. It's sort of like the third Transformers movie. You're like, well, that was better than part two. And, you know, but then you have to wait a couple years and look at it and see whether it was actually decent or not.
Very true.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis does play Humpty Dumpty, which I didn't recognize as him initially. It sounded like it was like almost David Cross played Humpty Dumpty.
Sometimes it's very hard to tell in terms of voice acting, but no, it's definitely him. And I believe Salma Hayek is also voicing
She plays Kitty Softpaws, yeah. I liked it. What's interesting is there's a lot of parallels between it and Rango.
Huh.
Because they both sort of tell that sort of Spanish Western type story. I mean, of course, Rango was much more that the spaghetti Western, which was supposed to take place in America. Sort of that element. This one was much more of that Spanish. But see, the same thing. You know, of course, you're dealing with the Mexican desert and that. But it's the Spanish. I'm assuming it takes place in Spain. They don't define it. So it's either the Spanish countryside or either Spanish countryside or Mexico. I don't know where they're going for in it. So it does have that European flavor to it to a degree, and to the point that there's actually a scene that is there's a whole like stagecoach chase scene that reminded me of Rango. Now Rango's way better. Rango's a way better movie, but I like Puss in Boots as a character, and it's not a great movie. There's a reason why it's opening like on October 28th instead of like November 15th or, you know, June 15th.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. There's not a whole lot of stuff out in the theaters for kids right now. So I think it's a good release. It's cute enough. It's fun to see. It's okay. It's decent. I'll give it a kind of rocks. So, yeah. Better than the other Shrek movies. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I like the first two, but well, you know what? And here's this is one thing that was a relief when watching it is the Shrek movies overdo the twisted fairy tale, because after the first Shrek, and the second Shrek, and you had like Ella Enchanted and Happily Never After, the twisted fairy tale, the jokes or the puns of Ye Olde Four Seasons or whatever. I mean, they got overdone and they kind of just ground that into the dirt. Hoodwinked was another one that just
gosh.
It just went on and on and on, and there is no new material in that sort of spoof nature. So what's nice about this is it doesn't do that. I mean, they have Humpty Dumpty as a character, and they have the goose and the golden eggs, and they have Jack and the Beanstalk. They have some things that are fairy tales, but they integrate it better than just making it a joke. So So yeah, if you've got kids, go see it. Let's talk about the next movie, which is, as I say, some as Jim pointed out in my show notes, Anonymous.
Yeah.
Which is not about Tom and Jerry. It's not a Tom and Jerry cartoon about Shakespeare. It's Anonymous, in which Roland Emmerich resists the urge to blow things up while contemplating who really wrote the complete works of William Shakespeare.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time. Writer of 37 plays, 154 sonnets, several epic poems, and why we are here today. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word?
You are the soul of the age.
None of your poems or your plays will ever carry your name.
Jim, did you see this?
I turned down the opportunity to go see a screening of this.
Really? Just,
yeah, I did. And I'll tell you what, I really don't have, I have no interest in seeing anything that Emmerich does that doesn't involve blowing something up. The costuming, the production value on this looks great. If you, get really excited about those types of aspects of a film, then, you know, this film is going to do that for you, by far. It's definitely a good choice in that aspect. But I cannot imagine seeing. It just doesn't excite me. I don't know. I'm sorry if I'm letting anyone down that's excited about this movie. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no, I get you. It is a weird diversion. I mean, 10,000 BC was a slight diversion for Emmerich because it wasn't that big event. Explosion picture,
yeah.
But he is known for movies like Independence Day and 2012 and The Day After Tomorrow, and he's a guilty pleasure of mine. It's him. Here's him going a little more intellectual, and he proves that he's with this movie more than any of his other films. He proves that he's an action director because this doesn't have any action in it, and it's kind of a mess. If you don't know the story, the whole thing is the it's been suggested that Shakespeare didn't write his own stuff and that he just sort of like put his name to it, and that it was this guy is a duke, I think. I don't even remember the name. This shows how much attention I paid to it. The problem with it is even though it poses it's an interesting. First of all, it doesn't know what it's trying to do, because on one hand, it's trying to put this sort of conspiracy, this sort of Shakespeare conspiracy out there, and it works to a degree. But then they're sort of like doing, well, let's get into the Elizabethan politics. And there's one point where I'm watching the movie and I'm like, God, it's been 20 minutes and they haven't even talked about Shakespeare or the plays yet, or you know, for a while. So they get into the politics thing. And then so there are aspects that are neat, like sort of like watching this is Romeo and Juliet performed for the first time and kind of how it wowed people then. And even though there's all these factual errors in it that I know because I looked it up on Wikipedia, I don't know my history, not to the level of this. They do kind of make the real William Shakespeare a bumbling idiot. So I mean, it's a little heavy-handed in that sense, but it is a costume drama. But the problem is, if you don't know the history, if you don't know who's who, you don't know who this guy is and who these people are and the historical backdrop of this rebellion that was happening or an attempted rebellion, it's kind of lost and confusing. And you know, is that Emmerich's fault? Yes and no. I mean, is it his fault that I don't know my history? No. But it got really convoluted, and it jumps around, too. It has flashbacks within flashbacks, and it starts as a play that then flashes back to what's really happening, and then it flashes back again, and then it flashes back again after that. And it just gets so confusing, and they're like two characters that look the same, and you don't know which era they're in. So it does kind of just comes apart at the seams. So I have to say I was not wild about this movie.
Yeah, that's the same way I feel, and that is why I probably will not be seeing this in theaters at all. I turned it down once. I have decided that I'm going to wait to see this on DVD.
Yeah, if he blew something up in the middle of it, maybe, but otherwise it kind of gets sucked. So we're going to go to a break.
Tony 32 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment with Jim. Jim, you can swear in this one. You know that? You can swear.
I
and say
know that. I know that.
Awful.
Gosh,
horrible.
Darn it. Crap.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I know.
Did you kiss your mother with that mouth?
I know. I'm crazy.
Oh, my gosh. So, anyways, let's talk a little bit about box office. I don't think there's really anything else to say about Shakespeare or Puss in Boots.
I agree. We have said it.
Let's talk box office. We were actually chatting off the air here during the break about you said that you were surprised at how well Paranormal Activity 3 did this weekend.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I should know that there's already a fan base set up for this film. I do think that the production value with the fact that Catfish's directors are involved in this, the production mm-hmm. value and the way that this film looked is definitely better than the past ones. So yeah. the fact of the matter...
Which is ironic because it supposedly was shot on VHS tape.
I know, but...
Because I'm watching it, I'm like, that's high definition. That sure shit ain't via that VHS.
Yeah, are you sure that they had that back in the 80s? I mean, come on. No, I don't know. There's so many aspects of that movie. I think this is one of the better Paranormal Activity films. I don't know. It's not my cup of tea. The whole franchise is not my cup of tea, and that's maybe why I'm coming from that aspect.
I love the first one just from the group dynamic aspect, and I saw this at a sold out show, the third one, and so you do get the people. It was at a college theater, so it was all college students in there and me, you know, this fat guy in his 40s, so. and you watch it, and everyone's like, when something happens, people are going, oh shit, look at that, oh my god, look behind, you know. So you got everybody talking, which kind of helps the movie along. And what's so funny is hearing these college students freak out over it. And I can't wait like 15 years from now when like teenagers are going to be like, god, mom, you thought that was scary? Oh my god, that's not scary. You know, and I can't wait to hear that because you'd be parents. It'll be like when my dad would be like, oh, the Wolfman from 1940 was terrifying and House of Frankenstein was terrifying. And I'm like, dad, no. You know? So I do think that there is a sense that these are not as scary as people. That people work themselves up into it, but it is sort of fun. And this is better than the second one, because the second one was crap. And there was only one scene in there. There's one scene where they do an effect, and that scene, the sort of the digital part of it broke down. And you could totally tell it was an effect. When they were using practicals, there's this thing with a ghost, where the spirit is under a sheet and then it just poof disappears and the sheet falls down. That's effective because that was practical and looked great. So, yeah. But I'll tell you, the first 75 minutes were very rote. The last 10 minutes will fuck you up if you don't know what's going on. What's so funny is I have a friend who, interesting story, it's a woman I used to date. And, you know, we're both married to different people and we both have our own kids. And her daughter is 15, and so we're friends on Facebook, so she sends me a message. She's like, hey, Molly wants to go see Paranormal Activity at midnight, what do you think? And I'm like, when I was 16, you were taking me to bars. but I wrote back and I'm like, well, you know, they're rated R for language mostly and scares, and it's a midnight of fun experience. So then like the next day I emailed her. I'm like, hey, how'd it go? She's like, oh, it was great until like the last 10 minutes, and then she slept the lights on when she got home.
Because
it was like her first R-rated movie. So yeah, it was scary. It's eerie, and it is one of those things. Like I had gone and seen it, and theater at OSU in the Ohio State University, and so everything's open late. You know, on a Sunday night or a Thursday night. So I'm coming out of the theater and I go down and there's this little like brick oven pizza place, and I pop in there to get a pizza and a Coke, and I go home. So I drank, and then I came home, and I just passed out because I had phone calls at like 6 in the morning. I only get 3 hours of sleep. But in the middle of the night, I had to pee, so I get up, and lights are off and everything, and I'm going to the bathroom, and I'm looking at the mirror, and it's dark, and I'm like going, I'm not saying Bloody Mary into that fucking thing.
No, when I saw that, that brought back memories of me as a kid, or, you know, doing that crap. And I was like, yeah. Oh, my God. And that freaked me out just then, and I can't even think about it.
The blood. Did you see Paranormal Activity 3, or have you not seen it yet?
No, actually, I did not see that yet. But the
trailer scene is what you're talking about.
The trailer scene is what I'm talking about.
It's a different scene. They do it differently in the movie, so it's not that actual scene, and it is intense when it happens. So it's actually different. So it's not the two girls in front of the mirror. It's the girl and this other guy who's like babysitting her. And what they do in that scene, I'm just like, that's impressive. That would freak me out. And I wouldn't do it. Sort of like, remember when Candyman came out about 20 years ago?
Yes.
Did you go home and say Candyman 5 times in the mirror?
No. I tried. You know what? I was one of the dumbasses that did go home and say Candyman 5 times in the mirror. But,
and then this big black guy with a hook comes and kills you.
Yeah, then like, Tony Todd jumped through my mirror and attacked me. No.
Wow. So, you know what? Here, Paranormal Activity 3 did very, very well over the weekend. Made over $52 million. It was slightly overestimated, but I mean, it was like $54 million versus $52 million. Still the highest R-rated opening in October. Or no, is it ever? No, it's not the highest R-rated opening ever. But it did extremely well. Extremely well.
Yep.
And it was interesting. If you look at the budget for the first movie was like, what, $17 or something like that? Yeah. And then the next movie was $3 million. This one's $5 million. At some point, they're gonna converge. It'll be like $10 million on the next one, because anybody who's getting involved with Paranormal Activity is gonna be like, well, you guys are gonna make tons of money, so I at least want a percentage and that sort of thing. So I'll be curious to see where they continue with this. Are they gonna continue going back in the past and going to, like, are they gonna shoot the next one on Super 8? Which I think would be clever.
That would be interesting if they actually did that, because. Yeah. We were talking about that on the Geek Tyrant podcast just yesterday, and I was like, basically they would have to do that. Yeah. I mean, how much further are they going to go? And the next one after that, it's going to be Super 8, this next one. Then they're going to go by still photography. I don't know.
The cave drawings. Paranormal Activity 9, cave drawings.
Yeah. Smoke signals then follow. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But yeah, $52 million, which I want to start a new podcast that's called Nikki Fink Has Great Numbers, But Her Head Is So Far Up Her Ass You Can Hear Her Asshole Puckering. Because I was reading her report, and she's like, she called it a game changer. First of all, if you're using the term game changer, hey, the olden days that had the joke about somebody calling and wanting their joke back, called and wants its joke back. It's not a game changer. Just because one movie had the third sequel do well doesn't change anything. It's just this is one that's just kind of had ramped up power, and what's going to happen at some point, the bubble's going to burst. They'll like do Paranormal Activity 4 and it'll burst. Now next, they'll have a fourth one. And maybe it'll suck ass, but it'll eventually. It's like Saw. Saw had this blip, and then kind of crashed at Saw 7. But it's did well, and it's a wildly profitable franchise. But I don't think it changes anything. The only thing it's doing is you're getting a lot more independent films. It's doing exactly what Blair Witch did. So you're getting a lot of independent films, people doing found footage films. But I don't think. I'm just glad that there aren't any more Hollywood-level films like this that are being flooded into the marketplace.
I couldn't agree with you more. I also, just the whole found footage phenomenon is hopefully going to be going goodbye. The only thing I could say, if there is one thing, I like the new film Chronicle that's coming up that's hopefully going to give some, maybe it might regenerate some vigor into the found footage phenomenon. I do think it looks a lot better than any of the found footage movies that we have seen in a long time. So.
Okay. I mean, there are a couple I like. I mean, I thought Cloverfield was okay. I really liked Quarantine, which is basically a reshoot of Wreck.
Yeah, exactly.
It irritates me when people are like, why did they make Quarantine? You could just go see Wreck. I'm like, because Quarantine's in English. Well, but why don't you just... Because no one in America is going to watch a Spanish language film.
Yeah, as much as I would like people to watch them, the reality, it's not going to happen. And I agree with you. I have seen both Wreck and Quarantine, and I have not seen the Quarantine 2 Terminal or whatever it is. But
I've seen the trailer, and that's about it.
That's about all I've seen, exactly.
Wreck 2 was cool. The second, which is a completely different story, but Wreck 2 I thought was really good.
I've heard the same thing. And you know, I have not gotten around to seeing that yet, but there are some, you know, I have been interested in seeing other found footage movies and trying to compare them to certain ones. And I'll tell you what, I think a game changer would truly be said to something like the Blair Witch Project. When you think about it, if you go back to that, that was not that was a film that really existed before the internet was really big, before all that stuff, and still created that viral, that word of mouth, that and spread that kind of energy about a film, and got people excited. So I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right. I think that's sort of the seminal found footage movie more than anything else. I think.
Yeah.
And Paranormal Activity's cool, but as long as there's no more of them coming. I mean, Paranormal 4 will come out. I'm just saying, as long as there's not, like, another one. I mean, there was Paranormal Entity, which I think was an Asylum movie. So, and I'm sure there's a porno normal activity out there somewhere.
I think that you might be very well correct.
I may actually have gotten the name right,
too. You may have. I know. I don't know. I do not know.
The other films, you had The Three Musketeers. Oh, this is another thing where they're like, this is another thing of why Nikki Fink's such a fucking moron, is she was like, this box office beats the box office slump. I'm like, well, only Paranormal Activity 3 did. Everything else is still underperforming. I mean, The Three Musketeers didn't even make $9 million in the theaters.
Yep, I know.
And then Johnny English Reborn, that didn't even make... I think the first Johnny English made more money on its first day of release than this one made its entire weekend. And the first Johnny English movie didn't do well in the United States. So these all has sort of had soft opening. But, you know, that happens. We're in a recession. People aren't going to be wanting to spend... Like, Three Musketeers, who wants to spend $15 per person to go see The Three Musketeers?
Not me. No.
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 It was not good.
No.
So. So, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
I believe that Puss in Boots is going to win. I really do.
You're putting your money on the pussy?
Yes, I am putting my money on the pussy. I think because, one, we touched on it just now, the fact that it's not a 3D film. Yeah. It's a family-friendly movie.
Well, it is a 3D film.
Is it a 3D film? Are you sure?
Yeah. I saw it in 3D. I can guarantee you it's in 3D.
Pardon me.
Every animated film is in 3D now.
It's that is such a shame. Forget me saying that. Maybe I shouldn't be betting on the pussy because I'll tell you what, it may very well be that it doesn't, you know, that might hurt it. My opinion, if animated films were doing the smart thing, they would not be in 3D, and families would flock to them like they already do anyway to the 3D movies. But think about it. I mean, you're taking a group of kids to 3D with glasses that barely fit their heads sometimes.
If some theaters, they'll have the child size ones.
Yeah.
I think the only animated release this year that wasn't in 3D was Rango, and that didn't have a huge didn't have huge box office.
That's I know. That's a shame. I'm hoping that will one day... that studios will get the point that they don't have to release it in 3D. That they, you know, I don't know. I'm hoping that's another thing that goes away, but that's me.
I'm not going to go through the big 3D argument because a lot of people have heard the show. I've made it a lot. I'm okay with 3D. I just think, and reiterating the ticket prices, if they just bring the ticket prices down, I think the 3D is fun. In animated movies, you can really get in there, and it always, almost always, looks good because they render it in 3D as opposed to doing some crappy post conversion to it.
Well, maybe that's what I'd prefer. You know, I agree with you on that aspect. I would love prices to be down. You know, that'd be perfect.
So I think that, but you know, then you have like Dolphin Tale, which overperformed and it was a 3D movie. So the Three Musketeers, I think whether it was in 3D or 2D, it was going to bomb. I don't think anybody cared about it. It didn't look good. It was like The Musketeer by Peter Hyams that came out about 10 years ago with Wu Ping doing the choreography. What the hell was that about? So I think you're right. I think Puss in Boots is going to do well. It's not going to make $50 million. But I think it's going to have enough to edge out Paranormal Activity. The thing is, Paranormal Activity, it's Halloween weekend. So I think that has a chance. I mean, look, even if it just drops 40%, it's going to still be at 30 million. It has a chance of winning a second weekend in a row. So
yeah, I think you're right.
I think that's, it's about 50-50. I think it's about 50-50 that Puss in Boots is going to win, because I think Puss in Boots is good for about 30, but I think Paranormal Activity may get 30. It may get more than 30 because it's Halloween weekend. So
very good point.
So we'll see. Bottom line, I think Johnny English Reborn is going to be off. A little bit of a note here. Apollo 13 made $6,074 last weekend. Did you know that was even still out in the theaters?
No, I did not.
Do you also know that that movie made money? It has a total gross of $17.5 million off a $5 million budget.
Great. Good for it. That's good.
I think an interesting thing to bring up, in the fact that there are movies that people think bombed and didn't do well, and Apollo 13 didn't, but it made $17.5 million off a $5 million budget. So, yeah. So
hats off to them. That's good. I never think that. I always trust, you know, check and double check and look at Box Office Mojo or whatever to check it, you know, because it. Just because it's not on the major top five radar doesn't mean it's still not out there chugging along and bringing in some bank.
It's made about $7 million overseas, so it's at about $25 million, which isn't bad for the return on investment. I don't know what the Weinsteins paid to promote it, but so let's move on. Let's talk about. The next thing is, we got listener feedback. We got a question from Steve, he claims his name's Steve, but it's really Gabe. He is from Facebook, and he asks, what is the difference? I guess this is an industry level question, but he's asking us, what is the difference between the associate, executive, or just plain produced by producers, and how do they get their titles and ranks? Do you want to field this one, Jim?
I can equate it to this. I mean, I can put it in layman's terms the best way I know how. And okay. It's a basis. It all has to do with money. It's who's in charge of the financial aspect of producing the movie and signs the checks versus who actually is doing the grunt work. Not to say it's grunt work, because producing is never really... I mean, I wouldn't call it all of it. There's different levels of grunt work. But actually doing and getting their fingers, their hands dirty, and making the action happen. You know, they have to oversee all of the aspects. People that are actually on set producing the day-to-day function of a film versus somebody that's, you know, under this... Plan B banner, you know, which is Brad Pitt's production company.
Yeah, Brad Pitt doesn't do shit.
Exactly.
He doesn't do
exactly.
shit. He puts his name on it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's the best way to put it. It's just like someone having a library named after them. It's all because they sign a check. And
Executive producer is basically the money guy. He's the guy who either sets up the finance or is sort of like the ultimate boss, like Steven Spielberg. Especially back in the 80s, when every single thing he did was Steven Spielberg presents as an executive producer. That's just him basically loaning his company to people to produce the film. So, I mean, it's there kind of in name only. Produced by, when somebody says produced by so-and-so, that, yeah, you're right. That's the person who's doing this thing. Doing, like you said, signing the checks and that sort of thing. Associate producer. Oh, and then there's another one. There's line producer, and that's basically the similar to the unit production manager, depending on the size of the project. It might be the same person. But line producing means you're there in the office running the set. And then associate producer. Now that's the one that has the most wiggle room, because it could be as ambiguous as this is the guy who gave Schwarzenegger the script. You know.
Yeah, you're right. If someone writes or creates an idea and they don't do anything aside from that, yeah. You know, they pitch the idea to the studio, or they pitch the idea to Schwarzenegger. You know.
Yeah.
He would get a producer credit on the film.
Well, I think, you know, I'm looking this up right now. I believe this is the case, so I'm going to vamp here for a second.
The movie
Good Will Hunting, which was, and that's a great example of it. It's executive produced by the Weinsteins, because it was a Miramax movie back in the late 90s. Now let me pull up the full cast and crew. So it's executive produced by the Weinsteins. They were not on set. They just helped get the movie made. They provided the financing and the as the way to bring it about. Scott Mosier and Kevin Smith got co-executive producer credits on it. And as I understand it, as the story goes, all they really did was just get the script read. So they got a producer credit for that. They didn't produce the movie, but the fact that they did some sort of action to give him a co-executive producer credit. Now they could also, that's the kind of thing you'd also might see an associate producer do as well. Associate just, it's thrown in there. It's like a vice president of a company. There's like 9 million of them. So I hope that makes some sense to you, Gabe. So, when it comes to independent film, all bets are off. It could be anything. I mean, you could have it, your dog can executive produce a movie. And I'm sure it has.
Yeah, I'm very sure of that too.
So before we go on and move on to the Fat Guy 5, I just want to again give you a free for all segment here for Jim. Is there anything that's sort of like that you want to bring up? Anything, any burning issues? You know, any news that you want to sort of point out? Keeping in mind that, you know, news becomes old fast. So this is going to be posting in.
One thing that I'm definitely interested about pointing out is the fact that you might have heard that Ben Affleck, speaking of Good Will Hunting, Ben Affleck is going to be he's being sought to produce, or pardon me, direct The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand. And I just wanted to say that I, as someone that we talked about this on my podcast recently, we were talking about how, you know, it'd be so good if that movie does get made and he does direct it, but at the same time, they break it down into three separate movies. And I'm a big fan. I know that there's a difference between breaking out one film into two films for money, Breaking Dawn, or
can I spit? But Breaking Dawn, if you look at the poster, it tells you everything about the whole movie.
Pretty much.
The entire movie's on the poster.
Pretty much, and you know,
the entire two movies is on the poster. It's so there's no subtlety. Why do they call it the Twilight Saga? It's not a saga.
I don't know. If I had an answer for that, I would be very well off, I'm sure. But I don't know.
That'd be like calling something the Sweet Valley High Saga. It's not a saga.
It's not a saga. No.
Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, those are sagas.
I think that I'd like to see, I hate to say it, but I'd like to see that made into a three-part film. So,
The
Stand.
Not Breaking Dawn.
Not Breaking Dawn, no. The Stand. Stephen King. Ben Affleck.
I'm getting surly looks from my wife, who's a Twilight fan.
Well, so. I've read all the books, and I've seen all the movies thus far. So I know, you probably... I understand, but
that's okay. I'm not getting laid tonight anyway, so Anyways, let's continue. Continue. Just pointing out that you really want to see The Stand directed by Ben Affleck.
Yeah, no. I think Ben Affleck is a solid director. He's currently directing Argo right now, and
I don't know what it's about. Is it a...
Basically, that's based on the Iranian conflict. The Iranian hostage crisis.
And
the situation surrounding that, how a fake science fiction film was created and to be filmed in the area so that the hostages could be safely taken out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's interesting. So it deals with that. There's going to be some interesting characters involved. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Clooney might be involved in that too. But,
is everybody going to have a bastard accent?
It's not going to be The Town. It's not going to be Gone Baby Gone.
That's what bothered. Let me just preface this by saying I think Ben Affleck's a good director and he's got a great handle on dialogue and character and composition. My only reservation on this is if you look at his first two films, Gone Baby Gone and The Town, they exist in the same wheelhouse. And yes, even Argo, even though it's a very different location, that sort of thing, it all's very grounded. I don't know if he's going to be able to do the high concept. That's the only thing that occurred, because he wants to get so gritty and because he did that in his other two movies. And I mean, I like The Town. I thought The Town dragged a little bit. It got into itself. So that's my big worry is he going to be able to let the story lift him up a little bit and go to greater places? Or, is he going to have trouble with that? I'm not saying he won't. I'm just, that's my reservation for Ben Affleck.
I understand. And you know what? It will be interesting to see. I'm interested to see him do The Stand, though. I really wanted to do it. I really hope that it works out. I don't know if it's going to now, because, I mean, he has signed on to do another Boston-style movie about Whitey Bulger, the mobster. So that's going to reteam him with Casey Affleck and actually Matt Damon. So
Matt Damon. Yeah.
Exactly.
I have to. It's contractually obligated. I have to say that every time somebody mentions Matt Damon.
I like it. Okay.
Yeah. So it's funny because I recently saw, and Fozzie Bear and I talked about this last week, about Red State. And yeah. I finally saw that, and I actually liked it. I thought it was good. And one of the things I said about it is I thought what I appreciated about it was it was Kevin Smith working outside of his comfort zone. And I thought it wasn't a perfect move, and he had issues, and he had problems. But the fact that he did work outside of his comfort zone was refreshing, and I liked the growth that I saw. What concerns me on the sort of the Ben Affleck of him going back to Boston, I understand he loves his hometown.
We get that.
But at some point, you're going to turn into the Boston version of Spike, the white Boston version of Spike Lee, where he did so many movies that were just all steeped in racial issues and that sort of thing. That then when he tried to kind of work outside of that, he just never could burst out of the prison that he made himself. And even though he has brilliant films, you know, when he does a movie like Inside Man, it comes and goes. And that's, I think, would be the same thing with... That's what I'm worried to see what's going to happen with Ben Affleck, is that he does some great movies, but, you know, 10 years from now, they're going to be like, oh, Ben Affleck, he's the guy who does all those Boston crime movies. You know, so that's the thing. You know, and Francis Ford Coppola, of all people, he has the problem, too, because he has been trying to... You know, for as huge of a director as he is, Coppola still can't escape The Godfather. I think Martin Scorsese has broken out of the Mean Streets mold, but I don't think, I think Coppola still struggles with that.
I can see what you're saying. He, just like an actor, can always be you know, thought of for a specific role that they do, and
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same way.
So on one hand, I'd love to see him do it because I'd love to see him break out of it. But I'll tell you, if It's funny. It's going to be an interesting bear trap to set it because Stephen King is so like steeped in New England because it's all about Maine. But the Stand is one of those few movies that really or the Stand. I mean, I stopped reading Stephen King's books when he stopped being an alcoholic, but his books got turned to shit after that. I mean, I'm glad he got sober, but you know that was the end of the good writing. But I read all of his books up to that point, you know, like the mid 90s, and The Stand's one of those few books that he's written that actually isn't so centrally located into the in Maine. It's the characters are from Maine, but they got characters from all over the place, and so hopefully not everybody in Ben Affleck's movie doesn't come from New England.
Yeah, the film is gonna a big part of it takes place in Boulder, Colorado. Yeah. So that's a major set piece, and almost I would probably envision that almost being like a character in the film. You know,
yeah.
So it'd be interesting. I'm interested in seeing it done by him, and I'd like to see it done in three different pieces. But I don't know. I don't know if it will happen. Who knows?
The other danger of doing the three different pieces is one thing when you do like Lord of the Rings and you do them in three different releases. It's such a mainstream. It could really hit the mainstream, and it was kind of that magical thing. But we've seen movies where they attempt to do three movies, and the first movie, you know, there's a bunch of fantasy movies that the Aragon was a great example. We're like, oh, we have all these books, and the first one doesn't do well.
Yeah, so. that is a good example. Yeah, I have a hard time believing though that The Stand or a Stephen King property. I mean, because even when Thinner came out on in the theaters, I mean that was probably one of the worst Stephen King movies, books to movie translations.
That's a bold statement right there, considering you have stuff like Dreamcatcher and
and
Secret Window.
Well, in terms of, I know what you're saying. I actually, yeah. Those other ones are good, though, compared to this, I think.
What? Seriously?
Yeah.
Dreamcatcher?
The
Shit Weasel? That did not translate to the big screen whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't.
You know, I disable every Dreamcatcher argument with the word Shit Weasel. That's...
Yeah, exactly. I have nothing to say to that.
It's sort of like whenever somebody's like, no, Alien Resurrection was okay. I'm like, the alien had boobies. And the argument's over at that point. No argument will supersede the alien had boobies. Is there any other news you want to kind of point out?
That's the main bit of news I thought was worth talking about. That's been on my mind. I'm interested in I talk about so many news, or I write about so much news during a day. It's just, you know, one thing that's very, very fresh that just happened tonight.
That would be Wednesday for those people who know this one.
Thank you for adding that. Dumb and Dumber is going to be getting a sequel from the Farrelly brothers with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels interested, I believe, in reprising their roles. So I think that's an interesting sequel that I'd like to see.
This intrigues me because this could be awesome. It could also be like getting raped by barbed wire. I don't think there's going to be a middle ground. This is not a movie that people are going to watch and go, "Eh, it was okay." It's either going to be awesome or it's going to be a shit popsicle.
Shit popsicle. I think you're right. I think it has potential to either be good or a shit popsicle, but I'm hoping that it's going to be good. So,
you know, speaking of shit popsicles, I just got word today that apparently there are no screenings for Jack and Jill.
Shit popsicle. Which,
honestly, I've been waiting for them to like kind of go, surprise, it's not real. We didn't really make this movie. We just wanted to see how long people would believe it. You know, it is in fact a real movie. Because did you watch South Park?
Yeah.
Do you remember last season finale where there was the where Stan kept hearing everything was shit and seeing everything as shit. And they're like, Adam Sandler plays Jack. Adam Sandler plays Jill. And all that. I'm watching that with my wife. And I showed my kids, because I showed them the poop sequence, because they're kids and they think poop's funny.
Yes.
I didn't show them the whole thing. I just showed them that the movie trailers. And I didn't think it was a real movie. And my wife's like, oh, no, that's a real movie. And I'm like, what? And I start seeing ads for it.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it.
I mean, we're talking like war crime atrocities bad. It looks so awful. And I go to the theater and I like see posters for it. I'm like, I still can't believe it's real. I cannot believe that this is going to be the love guru of 2011.
I think that's putting it kindly.
Well, but the love guru was one of those that everybody on the planet was like, this is not a good idea. And yet they made the movie. I don't think it's going to do well. Here's the thing that's funny. It's released by Columbia Pictures. And Columbia, at least locally, has had a fantastic history of screening everything. Now, if it's a Screen Gems, which they usually partner with, they don't screen Gems. But, like, they screened Geely, you know, back in 2003, 2004, whenever that came out. And recently, they screened Paul Blart Mall Cop. They screened Grown Ups. They screened Just Go With It. They've screened everything. I love the fact that Columbia Pictures has been the hell with the critics. We're going to screen it to them. Whether they like it or not, at least they'll get it. They've had the right attitude. They're not screening Jack and Jill. So read into that the studio that screens everything. They will screen Poop Popsicle, but they're not screening Jack and Jill. I am now somewhat interested in seeing this movie just to see if it could. I call these movies are the ones, like I refer to Whitney, the TV show Whitney, which is just so god awful.
I don't like it.
It's a way to reset my barometer. Because there's a lot of people, like I remember, I'm an apologist for the Matrix movies. I liked all three of them. I admit there's problems with the sequels, but I still enjoyed them. I liked them. I thought they did. They had some great things in them. And I know people will be like, that's the worst movie ever. And Matrix Reloaded is the worst movie ever. And I'm like, you haven't seen enough bad movies if you think that's the worst movie.
Exactly.
It's like Transformers 2. Transformers 2 had its problems, but seriously, there's way worse movies out there. Seen them every year.
Yep.
And so I like to see everything so I can then be like, well, okay, I'll give that movie 2.5 or 3 stars. And people are like, how can you do that? I'm like, well, because I saw, you know, I saw Meet Dave. So I have a feeling Jack and Jill's going to reset my barometer for the year.
I think you're probably correct. Based on everything I've seen and the fact that it looks retarded, and the fact that my wife wants to see it. Nothing against my wife. Believe me, I love her, but she's not the best choice of quality films. So
when she's like, I cannot wait to see this movie, you're like, oh.
Oh, Lord.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's not even like Real Steel. When Real Steel, when everyone heard that they were making Real Steel, they're like, well, that's a dumb movie. And then the trailers came out and people were like, it actually looks kind of good. And then you see the movie, you're like, that was a fun movie. I'm surprised.
Yeah, that exactly. Good example.
Yeah. This one, people heard they're making Jack and Jill. They said that's going to be shit. They see the trailers, they're like, that's shit. They're not screening it. I'm sure in a couple weeks when I actually go pay money to see it, it will be an absolute shit popsicle.
Yes, it will.
Let's move on. Anything else?
I think that about covers it.
We covered it. Yeah,
we did.
We covered it. We covered it, didn't we? Smeared it all over.
Yes.
Let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. This is in honor of Puss in Boots. It's a spinoff. Is because it's a spinoff of Shrek. So we said, and this is so funny. This is the most weakly worded Fat Guy 5 I've ever done. These are 5 decent spinoffs. We couldn't even say, usually we're like 5 great action scenes or 5 great this. We're saying just 5 decent spinoffs because, as a rule, spinoffs are usually not that good.
Exactly.
So I'm going to take the first one since this was mine. Actually, the first two were mine. Mork and Mindy. We also had to bring TV in on this because I don't know if movies count. I don't know if there's enough good spinoffs of movies. But Mork and Mindy, if you didn't know this, Mork was a guest spot on a Happy Days episode.
Yes.
And they spun off an entire series, yeah.
I love that. I think that was a good aspect.
Speaking of Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah. I think that Mork and Mindy was probably the best one on the list, and it's good that you mentioned that at the first. That's the best TV spinoff.
It was a great TV spinoff. And it was funny, is Happy Days Laverne and Shirley was also a spinoff of Happy Days, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
As was Joni Loves Chachi.
That was the only bad spinoff. That was a bad idea altogether. But
yeah. So, and there's other ones on TV that didn't make the list. Like, I think it was, isn't it Empty Nest? Wasn't that a spinoff of The Golden Girls?
I do not know. That's when I'm not. I've seen The Golden Girls all the time, but I don't know if Empty Nest was
I think it was. I think it was because they were like their next door neighbors or something. And it's weird to see a show that does that spins off, and then you're like, oh, well, that was actually a good show. Because usually spinoffs suck. The next one, this was also one I put in there. You want to take this one? Because I know you definitely agree with this.
Yeah, the Scorpion King?
Yeah.
I think that the Scorpion King, first of all, it introduced us to The Rock. It really did.
Dwayne The Rock.
In terms of his feature film, major debut, where he led a movie. And he did well. Yeah. It was a mix of funny. It was a mix of action. I've rewatched it. It has not held up in the test of time of great films, but it never was a great movie to begin with. But
I don't think it ever made that realm when it came out.
Yeah, it probably didn't. I don't know what I'm saying. I think that's why we have to classify this as decent, in quotation decent. Marks, because of that aspect right there. The Scorpion.
It also had Kelly Hugh in it.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous.
What's funny, is, I believe, is it has the kind of the crazy, the comedic sidekick of him during the film is the same person. It's like is George Clooney's production and writing partner on pretty much all of the films that George Clooney does. I don't know. That's all I know. It's sad that I can't remember his name, but. Uh-huh. Whenever you see a film produced or done by George Clooney, it was written or helped produced by him. So I don't know. He's he's in The Scorpion King. So there you go.
Wow. Okay. See, I thought The Scorpion King was decent. I thought he was more impressive in The Mummy Returns.
Oh,
as The Scorpion King, as the villain. But I thought they did a good job. I'm not saying the sequels are any good. Because the second one was shit, and the third one's coming out, and I'm sure that's going to be awful.
Yeah.
But
it's a fun B-movie. It's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked. It worked for what it was. You got the next one, too. I don't necessarily agree with this.
But. I know you don't agree with it. I know. And that's Evan Almighty. Oddly enough, I've been thinking about this since I suggested it. I actually think that Evan Almighty is better than Bruce Almighty. And you probably are wanting to shoot me right through the Skype right now, but
I wouldn't classify Bruce Almighty as cinematic gold that's untouchable. I mean, it's not like I didn't think that Shakespeare's that good of a writer.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, well, the reason I like it is because of the fact that I'm a big Steve Carell fan. Hands down, huge fan of Steve Carell. Like just about everything that he's been in TV, movie-wise, and I like it.
Even Curly Sue?
No.
Have you seen that clip? That's his first time he ever...
No, I did not know that. I've seen Curly Sue, and I did not know that he was in that.
Go to Yahoo and search Curly Sue Steve Carell.
I will.
And you'll get... And he plays like a... He likes a maitre d' or a waiter. He's in and out, and it's a walk-on, quite literally, and it was like 10 years before he ever did anything else.
Interesting.
You're looking it up right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am, but a bunch of videos came up, and he definitely looks younger. Before they were famous, Steve Carell in 1991's Curly Sue. Great. I will bookmark that right now to watch after the show. Thank you.
After you talk about Bruce Almighty.
Evan Almighty. I think it's great. It's got, it's about Noah's Ark. It deals with a lot of different stuff. It's definitely an interesting, kind of a spinoff. I think it's one of the better movie spinoffs that there are out there that I could think off the top of my head.
It just made the list.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it, and Jonah Hill's in it. He's pretty funny in it. Jonah Hill is in it, so that's always good.
there's no shortage of fat Jonah Hill. No. Just like you'll always be able to find a fat Seth Rogen movie at some point.
Yes, you will. I don't know. I think it's definitely one worth checking out. And I mean, it's got, I can't remember who plays his wife in it, but I don't know. I like the fact that there's funny animals and monkeys and crazy stuff, and I don't know.
I love your requirements for the movie. It's got Steve Carell, funny animals, and monkeys.
Yeah, I know. My requirements for films are not, you know, are not the most interesting all the times. But for that film, I have to say that those are my requirements.
There you go. The next one is another TV installment. Again, like I said, we kind of do TV. Because actually, I think TV... Because TV, they try and spin off shows all the time if they're successful. They have a better track record because, you know, it's you can spin off a TV show and people forget about it if it fails. But The Jeffersons, which is actually a spinoff of All in the Family. If people don't remember, The Jeffersons lived next door to the Bunkers, and George Jefferson got his own TV show, and a brilliant, brilliant show from the 70s and the 80s. I loved The Jeffersons. I grew up with The Jeffersons. And I watched it when I was younger. So I wasn't quite old enough to get All in the Family. You know, I was a little too literal, but I loved The Jeffersons. I thought The Jeffersons was a fantastic show, even to this day.
Yeah, it is a good show. I've seen The Jeffersons. It's not before my time. In terms of the reruns, you know, so I'm not as old as you, but, you know.
Well, if you are.
Great
in this business, in this business, in the blogosphere, it's a 20-something person's game, really.
You are very true in that, but I'm older than most of them. That's true. We both are.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm old enough to be some of these folks' dad, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
So. The last one on the list is another one that a lot of people don't know this. The Pink Panther cartoons. For those who don't know the history, the original Pink Panther with Peter Sellers that came out in 64, something like that. The story is about a thief who steals the Pink Panther diamond, which is a giant pink diamond that has an occlusion in the diamond that looks like a panther when you look at it. And so in the opening credits, they had the little Pink Panther come out of the diamond, and there was this little... the Pink Panther was running and causing problems for Inspector Clouseau. And it was so popular when they did that opening title sequence that they decided to make one-bit cartoons, these 10-minute cartoons, 7 or 8 minute cartoons, for theatrical release and for television of the Pink Panther. So I always grew up thinking that the Pink Panther cartoons were made first, and then they just kind of spun that off into a movie. It's the other way around. Were it not for that opening title sequence, you would have never had the Pink Panther cartoons. And I have to say, the whole Pink Panther cartoon is... They're neat little pieces of artwork. They're pop culture artwork from the 60s and 70s. So, that was a great spinoff.
I'm glad they bring that up because I think that I love the first Pink Panther film. Peter Sellers is great, but I love all the other ones too. The original films are good, and I recommend in terms of physical comedy, people definitely check those out.
Yeah. Curse of the Pink Panther. No, The Return of the Pink Panther.
Mm-hmm.
No. Wait, is a revenge? No, it's a Revenge of the Pink Panther. I think it goes Pink Panther Return. There's another one in there where Alan Arkin plays Inspector Clouseau, but it was, I think, the Pink Panther, the Return of the Pink Panther, the Revenge of the Pink Panther.
I think that he might have, Sellers might have actually died during filming of that one, if I'm not mistaken.
There was the fourth one. Yeah, I can't remember, but it's the one where he's forced to strip naked. Somebody steals his car and they make him strip naked and get out of the car.
Yes.
The middle ones, I thought he was fantastic in them, and they never were able to recreate it. They tried that one guy, I don't even remember who he was. I think he was in like Electric Dreams or something like that. And then they tried Roberto Benigni, and then they brought in Steve Martin, which I actually have to say, I liked the first one. The second one was kind of stupid, but,
yeah.
But yeah, Steve Martin, you're never gonna beat him.
Nope.
honorable mention, Wolverine. And I know people will be like, it wasn't a good movie. But I have to say, it still has a lot of potential, and they're making the next one. So hopefully this is me sort of, and this is why it's an honorable mention in terms of a decent spinoff. I thought it was okay. It wasn't an awful movie. Again, check your barometers. Go see Jack and Jill and then watch Wolverine and talk. So that one's also a nice little spinoff off the X-Men series. So I think that's about it. You ready to go to a break?
I am ready for that break.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are wrapping you up here because you go back and listen to the last segment. Nothing too offensive there. We talk about a bunch of things. We talk about some news like Ben Affleck and the potential to direct The Stand. And we talk a little bit about Jack and Jill and some crazy theories behind that movie. But yeah, go check that out. We also do a Fat Guy 5. But this time, we're in the last segment. So what do we got coming up here next, Jim?
The world famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. I'm going to let you start because you're the guest, and I am a gentleman.
How thoughtful of you. How thoughtful. I wanted to point out three genre films or horror films that I think on DVD are must-haves, are purchases that I'm going to make, even or hopefully someone will be nice enough to send them to me. Attack the Block was amazing in theaters, and I highly, highly recommend. If you did not get a chance to experience this wonderful film, Joe Cornish directed it. Great, great, unique film. It's different than anything you've ever seen before, and it is worth not renting, but going out and picking up. Buy it on Blu-ray today. It's available. It's great.
Great.
I like that. Rare Exports. A Christmas Story is a very interesting, darker holiday movie that I think might be one of those movies that I make a Christmas tradition in my household to watch.
They're pushing it as they're trying to align it with Gremlins as a dark holiday tale.
Ooh, and that's like that alignment.
The marketing's doing that. Now, I have not seen it. I've got it sitting on my shelf, but I refuse to watch any holiday movie before November 1st.
I think that's a good call. Unfortunately, holiday movies in my household basically are anything related to Hallmark holiday movies. So I know. Please go ahead.
You know, Christmas Shoes came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
You can get the Blu-ray of that.
Yeah, exactly. My wife would like that, actually. But Rare Exports is definitely one that actually, I know this is bad that I have not seen this movie, so really technically I shouldn't be recommending it, but I am going to recommend it because of the fact that I've followed everything from this is a film that started from just, you know, web movies, if I'm not mistaken, by Jamari Henson, and
it's Finnish, right?
Yeah, it's Finnish. It's correct. But it's, I don't know. I found it online and loved it. And I was like, wow, this would make a whole feature film. And they made it into a movie. And Oscilloscope Labs has released it on Blu-ray and DVD. So check it out.
And what's your last one?
Oh, Zombie. Lucio Fulci's Zombie, which basically, as we were talking about earlier before the show, it's supposedly the unofficial sequel to Dawn of the Dead, which I'm a huge, huge fan of zombie films. And Lucio Fulci's Zombie is one of the better zombie films, actually. It's one that I've seen, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because of the fact that it is an amazing digital transfer.
It comes out on Blu-ray. Yeah.
It comes out on Blu-ray. That's the cool thing about it. So it's got an amazing transfer. So it's worthwhile to check out, probably because of that. And those are my three, my DVD roundups. There you go.
The ones that I'm going to point out, of course, you've got the Jurassic Park trilogy on Blu-ray, which is a fantastic thing to have. It's a little grainy, especially for the earlier films at times, but I'd rather have grain than plastic looking people. But yeah, it looks good on Blu-ray. It's a neat little set, has all the archive special features and some new ones with new interviews. There's also Winnie the Pooh, which is an adorable update of the old theatrical shorts. It's not the sort of less care given to the TV shows. It's much better. Definitely worth picking up, especially for kids. It's very short. It's like 65 minutes. There's Captain America, The First Avenger, which was a great little superhero movie this summer. A Serbian film, another fine family movie. No, just kidding. Don't watch this unless you have a strong stomach, it's got some horribly offensive things in it, but I think it's a fantastic film. It's definitely something to get you thinking about how people perceive Serbia and what authority can do. So I'm one of the people who are supportive of this film. There's also Wrong Turn 4, which is ironically a hilarious movie just to watch a splatterfest. It's tongue in cheek. They literally have a scene in there where somebody says, "I think he's going to take a wrong turn. I know it." So, it's great. It's meant to be just dumb. And there's also Atrocious, which is another found footage film from Spain. It's not as good as Wreck, sort of a Blair Witch kind of thing. It's okay. It's one of those movies that suffers from the fact that it really needs to be only about 50 minutes, but it's got to be feature length. The stinker for me was The People versus George Lucas, just because all these old jokes are 10 years old, or these arguments are 10 years old. But we got to get going here. We got about a minute left. Review wrap up. Anonymous, I said, kind of sucked. In Time gets a preemptive suck. Rum Dyer gets a preemptive suck. Puss in Boots gets a sort of rocks, or kind of rocks. Next week, we're going to be talking Tower Heist and a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. 30 seconds, Jim, tell us where to find you and how to get in touch with you.
Well, you can find me as Tiberius on GeekTyrant.com and most importantly at Jim_Napier on Twitter.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim, for being on the show. And it was a pleasure having you here. I'm glad that we finally got you on, and we'll definitely have you on again.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. It was a great time.
All right. We'll talk to you all later next week.